T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
KMOX.
Listen anytime, anywhere.
Get the radio.com app today.
Mr. President, you're driving us crazy. You're winning too much.
I'm a man. I am an anchor man. I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and bronze. That's what kind of man I am.
Government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem.
I got into broadcasting because I like to give. Sometimes I found myself hurting. I'm giving too much.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Mark Reardon, ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and give a warm welcome to this guy.
On KMOX.
Well, I got to tell you, our Parkway Central porn lawyer Michael Avenatti, who, of course, was a guest on this show several months ago, and I thank him for that because I still think it's the only local radio that he did outside of some of the national stuff in the aftermath of representing Stormy Daniels. He's in a little bit of trouble here. And, you know, Michael always told us throughout the Kavanaugh hearings and when he brought these ludicrous allegations forward, believe the victim, right? We heard believe the victim over and over and over. So you have an actress now by the name of Marilee Minuti. I'm not actually sure how to pronounce her name. But she was in Ocean's 8. She had a real small part in that. She filed paperwork in Santa Monica just days after Avenatti was accused of domestic violence that allegedly left a woman's face swollen and bruised. So Avenatti, who of course represents Stormy Daniels, says, well, I'm going to clear my name. But some of the details of this are pretty interesting. I can find them. I had them up here a second ago. That's not the right copy here. What did I do with that? Here we go. I had one Avenatti story. This is from TMZ, but look, they have the documents. She says that she and Avenatti were in the master bedroom of their apartment arguing about money on November 13th. He called her an ungrateful blanking B-I-T-C-H. She says he followed her into a guest bedroom while verbally berating her and hitting her forcefully in the face with pillows. She claims he said, do not disrespect me. You don't get to sleep in my house tonight. Morelli says Avenatti grabbed her by the wrist, pulled her off the bed in the guest bedroom, and when she escaped his grasp, she started texting a friend. She claims he grabbed the phone out of her hand, started screaming for help out of a window. Avenatti then dragged her by her right arm and out into the public hallway of the apartment building. She says she was wearing only underwear and a t-shirt and suffered scratches on her leg and on her side. She says she rang a neighbor's doorbell for help, but Avenatti grabbed her, dragged her back into the apartment, shut the door, preventing her from leaving. So he's now got, a restraining order that has been slapped against him because of this. The documents that she filed says this was the second time that Avenatti was physically violent toward her. She says the first time was in February when he pushed her out of the apartment into the hallway where she struck her head against the neighbor's door and threw her shoes at her. She also claims that he has a history of being verbally abusive and financially controlling. Michael, I hope this is not true. Although I have been told by you and others, believe the victim. So I'm going to choose to believe the victim. I want to get to the Ivanka Trump stuff. And that's one of the big stories of the day. We got a bunch of other things going on. I haven't mentioned the St. Louis Blues. Woke up this morning, turned over, looked at my phone. The alert had come through about Mike Yeo, fired as the head coach, Chris Kerber, who is about to jump on an airplane, head down to Nashville for a game tomorrow night. Joining us this afternoon, Kerbs, how are you?
Mark, I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm good. We kind of saw the writing on the wall here, right?
Yeah, I think we all know the sports business well enough to know that when the results are there, some things are going to change. And, you know, it's an old adage, but it's true. It's a lot easier to change one guy than it is to fire an entire team. And so, unfortunately, and I'll use Doug Armstrong's quotes, Mike Yeo paid for the sins of an organization, I guess, is how he described it. And that's where we are today. So Craig Berube is now the interim head coach of the St. Louis Blues. Mike Yeo has been relieved of those duties, and the team will head to Nashville and take on the Predators tomorrow night.
So when we say interim coach for the time being, does that mean for a couple of months? Does that mean for the rest of this year? How, and I guess you're not Doug Armstrong, and I realize that, Chris, but what? How should we interpret that, I guess?
Well, I think it's right now it's because you made the decision that you were going to make a coaching change last night and you had to make a move. Relieved of those duties, and the team will head to Nashville and take on the Predators tomorrow night.
So when we say interim coach for the time being, does that mean for a couple of months? Does that mean for the rest of this year? How, and I guess you're not Doug Armstrong, and I realize that, Chris, but what? How should we interpret that, I guess?
Well, I think it's right now it's because you made the decision that you were going to make a coaching change last night and you had to make a move. And so you're not going to turn around and name Craig Berube the head coach right away. It gives Doug Armstrong and the organization a time to assess where they're at, where they want to go from a coaching standpoint, and how they want to handle things. If you remember, you know, knowing that Ken Hitchcock was going to leave, Mike Yeo was the coach in waiting. He was signed, you know, to a season before he was supposed to, and then he took over halfway through that year.
Yes.
You know, I think this is going to be different. Craig Berube is going to have a chance to coach the team, but Doug Armstrong stated they're going to build a coaching list that's going to include current, veteran coaches, maybe some coaches from the collegiate level, some coaches from major junior level, coaches from the American Hockey League, and they're going to really assess the situation top to bottom. So he said he's not going to address it and talk about it anymore, so he's sitting there ready to name a head coach, whether that be Craig Berube or somebody else. But, the reality of it is he has to do a coaching search, and whether that happens over the next month, 2 months,
we'll have to wait and
see. Or 5 months, well, that remains to be seen.
All right, so when it comes to the fan base, you know, a lot of people are mentioning Joel Quenneville, who got ditched by the Blackhawks. He has been a St. Louis Blues coach before, but look, that's unrealistic just from the financial standpoint, isn't it?
Well, that's not a question for me to answer. That's a question for the ownership group to answer. And here's the one thing that I can tell you. Tom Stillman has made it a mandate since he took over this hockey team that what matters is the product on the ice first and foremost. And he has done everything he can. And the business side, run by, you know, Chris Zimmerman and then Steve Chapman under him, has done what they can to make sure all the resources are available for the St. Louis Blues to spend right up to the salary cap. And that has been the case. So, you know, based on that track record, I don't rule anything out. I don't automatically assume that someone that can find a way to own a hockey team can't afford a coach. So, no, I don't look at it that way. I look at it belief that if they want them and there's a way, they'll find a way to get it done. But I don't want to put words in somebody's mouth either. Doug Armstrong, I think, is going to look at a whole bunch of different options.
Why is it seeming, you know, we had all kinds of expectations. You got a lot of talent on this team. Now you make a coaching change. But it seems like this team does not have, and I know there's been line changes, and, you know, I think that you have Mike Yeo's been dabbling this. They seemingly have no chemistry. And how, you know, I think a lot of people would sit back and say, how is that possible?
You know what? I kind of agree with what Doug Armstrong said when he basically talked about this core group. They transferred from the one core group that at one point had been Oshie and Backes and company, and they've now gone to this next one that includes Schwartz and Tarasenko, and Doug said, you know, Alexander Steen and Petrangelo. He says he calls his core group a group of 8 or 9 players, and he said their equity is gone. In other words, I read that to believe I don't believe in this group. Now they're going to have to prove it to me, and I'm going to make some changes if they don't. That's exactly what I read into that. And frankly, I don't know why that is. I don't fully believe that it's coaching. I believe you're going to get a spark here with Craig Berube taking over, who's a very direct, a straightforward guy. You know, but I don't think a leopard changes its spot. So, you know, frankly, some of this group has to figure out whether or not they actually want to come out and play shift in, shift out. And we just haven't seen that consistently enough. So you start with the coaching change, and then if need be, then you start to move some players around.
All right, Chris, well, enjoy the trip to Nashville. It's kind of a back-to-back deal, right? Right after Thanksgiving, another game on Friday night with the Predators.
3 nasty games coming up in Nashville, then home against Nashville, home against Winnipeg. So a very important 3 games, which is also one of the reasons I think Doug made the move when he did.
Hopefully you're celebrating Turkey Day with a victory, getting ready for the weekend. Have a great Thanksgiving, Chris. We'll talk soon.
All right, you too, Mark. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you after the holiday.
Chris Kerber with us this afternoon, and we'll come back with much more here on KMOX on this Tuesday afternoon edition, pre-Thanksgiving edition. And my producer, Dave Klein, who's in the other room right now, is off tomorrow. He's already informed me that he's checked out. I think everyone has, right? Wherever you're working right now, people are checking out. They don't want to work. You don't want to work. It's Thanksgiving week. It's a holiday week. We're going to just shut this thing down. Actually, during that interview with Chris Kerber, it sounded like we did shut that thing down. We had a technical glitch, and I apologize for that. Well, older woman, I guess we should call her, Megan Green, was on yesterday talking about, I guess, whatever you want to term it, hiccup or a hitch in the financing plan for the MLS stadium, is at least where the city is concerned, what they have to do to put this package together. And I don't know if you heard that interview yesterday, but I remained a little confused. And I heard from Lewis Reed, the president of the Board of Aldermen, last night. He said, hey, some of this stuff is not exactly the way that she explained it, which did not surprise me. I give her credit because I do think that there needs to be some accountability for the financing and whoever's going to take care of this stadium. And I'm hoping it's going to be the new owners. But there are particular nuances of the tax breaks that President Reed will break down for us here in a few minutes in the next segment. We have, you know who's in the building today? Mike Claiborne. And he's doing sports for Rabies, so he's going to stop by in the 3 o'clock hour. So I actually had a listener who sent me this op-ed piece that was in the Kansas City Star by Tim Lomar, who's the prosecuting attorney in St. Charles County. He's also the president of the Missouri Association of Prosecuting Attorneys. Usually people send me stuff and I either delete it because it's hate email or something along those lines. But I actually read this. I thought it was an interesting piece, and it has to do with prison reform, with, you know, justice reform. And it was in response to someone by the name of Michael Barrett, who's the State Public Defender System Director, in a piece that he had written called Rural Jailing Policies Make Cities Less Safe. So Tim responded to that, and I thought some of the points he made in here were worthy of a discussion, so I invited him to come on this afternoon to talk about it just a little bit pre-Thanksgiving. Tim Lomar, how are you? Welcome to KMOX. Welcome back, I should say.
Hi, Mark. Good to be with you again.
So I kind of set that up accurately, didn't I? Michael Barrett wrote this piece, and you took issue with a bunch of the stuff that he wrote about, right?
Yeah, I think so. There's been quite a bit of talk within the criminal justice circles about reforms, and while that's certainly a discussion that's worth having, I think the most important part of that is you got to start with the right set of facts. And so I thought that was really the one thing I wanted to set straight.
Yeah. So his contention is that rural jurisdictions make crime in St. Louis and Kansas City worse because they put too many criminals behind bars for too long of a time. So that was his theory in point, or his thesis, right?
Yeah, I think that was the upshot. And I think, the one part of his article talked about the county's ability to try to recoup the board bill for their prisoners, and how, the larger jurisdictions are having to fund the rural parts of the state.
Right.
I think that sort of changes the argument. And really, I think what's important to take away is, we've got a large prison population. There's no doubt about that. But a very, very small percentage of those people are first-time nonviolent offenders. And that's really where the truth lies.
Now, you're talking, when you say a lot of people, there's 30, you cited in the piece, 32,000 people incarcerated in the state, right?
32,000.
That's a lot. Now, the contention that's made by a lot of folks, I see it here in our Post-Dispatch, where the argument is made that you have too many people that are first-time nonviolent offenders. And as you mentioned, that's exactly the opposite, right?
Yeah, it couldn't be further from the truth. There are approximately 400 nonviolent first-time offenders that are in prison. And of that number, a significant percentage of those people who are serving sentences for DWIs or embezzlement from a business where they
own. People who should be behind bars.
People that I think most of my constituents and constituents around the state would agree they need to be locked up, at least for some period of time.
So he offered an example, and this is sometimes what happens with anecdotes. He tells the story of a guy in Texas County, Missouri, $100,000 bond because of an allegation of stealing gasoline. Our friend Tony Messenger has been writing columns about this these types of stories or cases in the Post-Dispatch. I don't read them. I see the headlines. I figured there's two sides to the story, so I kind of ignore Tony. But that's me editorializing, Tim. You don't have to comment on that. But what happens when he wrote this, when Barrett writes about this, he leaves out some details of that, right? It sounds like, oh, this guy's getting a raw deal because he stole gasoline and they're holding him in jail, and that's not right.
Right. And the backstory, of course, there always is a backstory. That person had been convicted of stealing crimes several times prior to this. He was already on probation at the time he committed this stealing offense. And it was not just like a gallon of gasoline. It was a 55-gallon barrel of gasoline from a small school district. So
you got to give him an A for effort on that one, though, I think. I don't know. That, you can't do that as a prosecutor, but I can as a talk show host.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
All right. So, obviously, more nuance to that story, and this is what happens with a lot of these. But where do you think this should take us? Look, prison reform has been discussed nationally, and they even got a bill together in Washington on this. I firmly believe, philosophically, and your numbers are important here, because I would be one of those people that said, look, we don't need to have a bunch of nonviolent offenders and drug offenders in jail because they're taking up resources. But the numbers sort of tell a different story, as you pointed out. When it comes to prison reform overall, because this is still a topic of interest, Tim, where do you think we need to be heading?
I think we absolutely need to take a look at the symptoms that cause the problems. What I mean by that is I can tell you, for example, of all the felony cases I have pending right now, I would venture to guess that at least 85% of those have something to do with somebody's substance abuse addiction, whether that's alcohol, whether it's heroin, whether it's methamphetamine. What we really need to do as a system and as a society is take a look at trying to deal with those issues on the front end before these people get caught up in the criminal justice system. I'll just give you a quick example, Mark. We've got a treatment court here in St. Charles County. It's an outstanding program, and we provide that as an incentive to people to not only avoid incarceration, but also to become capable of living without drugs or alcohol. It cost me about $8,000 to put one participant through the treatment court for a 12 to 18 month program, whereas the only treatment that's provided for first-time offenders through the prison system is a 120-day program, which costs about $24,000. So you do the math, it makes sense.
You have a situation where a lot of cities are in states, I guess, and folks are talking about prison reform, and you know, this even goes to freezing the death penalty. You have decriminalization of marijuana possession. You mentioned here, low-level offenders to classes and treatment instead of jail. So there seems to be a movement afront. But this, as you pointed out, this is a little bit more complicated than saying, look, we got a bunch of people behind bars that maybe shouldn't be there.
Yeah, it's a lot more complicated than that. I think we can take a look at the facts, and I can tell you that we can justify probably 95%+ of why people who are incarcerated should be incarcerated. But let's take a step back and maybe take a higher level view. What is it that causes them to put themselves in that situation? If it's an addiction, we as a system need to come up with ways that we can help them deal with that on the front end. And I think that's where the future of criminal justice, sensible criminal justice reform lies.
There's this bill, and I mentioned what they're doing in Washington, that deals with loosening mandatory minimum sentences. What's your opinion on mandatory minimum sentences?
It's circumstance specific. I think there are very good reasons why we have mandatory minimum sentences on, say, for example, certain chronic DWI offenders or violent offenders, people that have done something that for the protection of the community need to be locked up for a significant period of time. But there aren't that many of those. There's a very small variety of mandatory minimum sentences that we work with here in the state.
Do you know Wesley Bell at all, who's coming in as St. Louis County prosecuting attorney?
I do know Wes. He's a fine guy.
So, yeah, you know, he seems like a sharp guy, and just not, I'd like to have a discussion with him about some of these things, because obviously he's coming into the position, and he's talked about, you know, prison reform and some of the things that he might do differently. Have you had discussions with him about that? I mean, these are some of the things you wrote about in the piece.
We just had some very basic, conceptual idea discussions, I guess, but not anything in terms of in practice. But I've told Wes this before. I'd certainly be happy to talk with him and maybe provide my perspective on what's a sensible criminal justice reform for sure.
Yeah, and I bring it up from this perspective because I think there were, and I don't, you know, I think I would get accused of shooting from the hip sometimes, but when he won that election, I'll be quite candid with you, Tim, I didn't see that coming. I don't think a lot of people saw it coming, but there would be a temptation on the part of some folks, and I think I would admit that I was in this camp to think that some of the things that he's talking about when it comes to reform were a little crazy. But when I started looking into them a little bit more, I think they do. Some of the topics at least are worthy of discussion moving forward when it comes to certain people who should or should not be in prison.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, the other thing is that we as prosecutors and we as a criminal justice system, we've got to understand just because we've been doing things a certain way for a long time, that doesn't mean we're doing things the right way. There's always room for discussion. There's always room for reasonable discussion. And I do believe that the discussion from both sides is really going to produce some sensible criminal justice reforms.
Do you think that some of those reforms, and this is something else that Mr. Barrett wrote about and you talked about, is this task force that exists out there and they're talking about making sure that people aren't held because they can't afford to post bond, which is a little different than the case in Texas County because that guy had a history and he was even challenging them saying, look, you're never going to find me if I get out. But those are some of the things that they're talking about, non-monetary conditions of pretrial release. I don't even know what that would mean.
Yeah, that is an area that that could use some scrutiny and some reform. And we're, you know, prosecutors statewide, we are a part of that. And I can tell you this, just, and this is from my personal experience. Periodically, I will go through the list of people who are incarcerated while waiting trial here in our county detention facility. And I can tell you, with rare exceptions, almost everyone is somebody who has been in and out of jail, who's been on probation,
yeah,
in prison. So these are not just people who are arrested for a simple offense, who've never been in the system, who are locked up while they await trial.
That's, yeah, we hear that all the time from the state. It's not, you're not even talking about like second time offenders. We're talking about people who have offended multiple times in many cases.
In almost all cases.
Yeah, right.
Almost all cases. It's extremely rare to have somebody held on a cash bond that's never been in the system before.
Tim Lomar, St. Charles County prosecuting attorney. Also, he is the president of the Missouri Association of Prosecuting Attorneys. Wrote a piece in the Kansas City Star. I thought it was pretty interesting, worthy of discussion. We'll continue those in the future. Tim, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
2:30, President Reed of the Board of Aldermen coming in here, talking about the stadium bill and what the board needs to do. Megan Green, who's on the board, came on yesterday and talked about some things that Lewis wanted to set straight. So we'll give him the opportunity to do that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, let's talk a little bit about soccer here this afternoon. We talked about the Blues with Chris Kerber. I haven't even mentioned that game last night. That was exhausting. A little let down because I'm a Chiefs fan, but what a game. And you know, the game that matters is the Super Bowl in Atlanta between the Chiefs and the Rams, although it'll never work out that way. Though I'm guessing the Chiefs will collapse again after, you know, a great season. They should win out. If you look at their schedule, they got Oakland a couple of times. The Chargers are good, but they're coming off a bye, so they don't play for another 10 days, which I think is good. But, man, that was a crazy game last night. The president of the Board of Aldermen in the city of St. Louis, Lewis Reed, reached out to me last night. I had Megan Green on, one of the wacky members of the Board of Aldermen. But, look, some of the things that she was saying about the stadium deal and the MLS project I thought were rather interesting. Lewis wanted to come on and maybe rebut some of that. How are you? Good to see you again.
I'm doing great. How you doing today, Mark?
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to you,
too. What is on the table at the Reed household? Traditional turkey and dressing?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That and, you know, also time to just hang out, watch a movie. We normally go to a movie
that
evening.
Yeah, that's cool. What's on your list? Do you have anything?
I don't know yet, but it's generally a movie you would normally not go see, right? So that we can
we'll have fun with it. Yeah, I'll make some recommendations to you. So what's going on with this? You know, I will be honest with you. I'm a little confused. So let's start there with what you guys are tasked with in order to get this thing together and approved and moving forward, because I think people are excited. Obviously, the ownership group is not asking for tax dollars per se, but there are implications for taxpayers in the city, right?
Yes, yes. And, you know, the biggest challenge with this thing is just keeping some of the politics out of it and assuring that the people have the correct unfiltered information. This is a great deal for the city, no matter how you look at it, right? If you look at the location that they're talking about going, that's that 22nd Street Parkway location with all of the on and off ramps and everything there. And the city has been trying to, for years, come up with some type of development plan and acquisition of those properties. And we've been unsuccessful because of the major cost that's involved in it. So I think that that's where we start. Let's look at that. That property is estimated to be valued somewhere in the neighborhood of $29 million, right? So
pretty good piece of real estate.
Pretty good piece of real estate. So if you are looking not to give city resources and city money to any rich, quote-unquote, rich developer, last thing you would do is just turn over a $29 million piece of property that the city can market in the future in case soccer does not make it in the city of St. Louis. So that's the first thing. So I think it's important that the city holds on to that piece of property. And the way the deal works is that once that property is obtained, right, from MoDOT, the ownership group will reimburse the city any cost of land. So we essentially get the property for free. The city has it, right? The ownership group, led by the Taylor Kavanaugh families, but more importantly, the first female-led team, led ownership group ever to do anything like this. So I'm excited about just that. And they're bringing $400 million of private financing to the deal. So what does that mean to the city of St. Louis?
Let me stop you there and back up just a little bit. On the land deal, so the MoDOT will be reimbursed, but that money will come from the ownership group.
Yes.
The city will then still have the ownership of that land.
So if
keep. Right, I think that's good too. So if this goes belly up, let's say we end up, this never happens, but let's say a professional team moves and vacates a big dome that's still never been paid for. Let's just say in a fantasy situation, I've never heard of things like that. But if that would happen in this situation, you still have a big piece of property that the city would have control of.
Yeah, over 35 acres of prime real estate. And some say that, you know, this piece of real estate, if indeed it is prepped for development, which is going to cost millions of dollars from the team to prep this thing for development. Now, when we would have, let's say 15 years from now, we would have the team goes belly up, and we maintain ownership of this piece of property. Now we have a piece of property worth, you know, tens of millions of dollars that we then have the option to market to someone else.
But right? couldn't you also say, look, it's sitting there, it's been sitting there for a long time. You can be marketing all along now.
It is a difficult piece of land because there are grade changes, all sorts of things that happen within those interchanges there, environmental remediation pieces, all sorts of things that have to happen to get it to where it's buildable and ready to go, right? That's what the team is going to do for us. And think about this. For over 60 years, the city of St. Louis hasn't received one penny of tax dollars, revenue, or anything from that piece of property. So what will this deal do for us? This deal will turn a piece of property that is not an income or revenue-generating property for the city today into a revenue-generating property for the city. It then also turns over a piece of property that's worth nearly $30 million in today's
market to
the city of St. Louis.
So that's a net gain,
massive net gain. And then just the economic impact of bringing an additional 350,000+ people into the city for the games and stuff, right, on an annual basis to the city. Helps with our hotels, our restaurants, our retail locations all through downtown. We'll see a positive economic impact from that. The deal is structured so that the main sources of revenue that the city would put in would be site-based taxes, which means that of the three taxes I'm going to talk to you about, you do not pay them. Not a penny comes out of your pocket. unless you attend a game.
Hold on to that thought. We'll take a break. I want to come back, explain that, and I want to play you something that Alderman Green said yesterday on the show. Get your reaction to that. We'll come back with more Aldermanic President Lewis Reed on KMOX. Hey, Mike Claiborne is hanging out today. He's doing sports for Chris Raby. He's going to spend some time with me in the next half hour here on KMOX. We have the president of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed, in here, and sort of an update on what's going on with the MLS project and the new soccer stadium downtown. Before the break, you were talking about the three different taxes and how people would be affected. So sort of run through those. We'll have to do a bit of a speed round here because we're going to run out of time, and I have several questions. But the taxes, go.
Real quickly there, this thing is mainly being funded by three different site-based taxes, right, and use taxes, right? So you will not have to pay one penny for this thing unless you go to a game and shop there on site, right? And it's a 1% community improvement district, right? 1% through what's called a TDD, a transportation development district, and then 1% from the Port Authority. The other thing that's in this is a 50%. We will recapture 50% of the amusement tax and put it in a major projects fund for the future.
Maintenance fund, if
you
will.
Major projects and major maintenance fund, not just maintenance.
What would major projects mean?
A major project or major maintenance fund would be, you know, say in 20 years there's a, you know, major project that the city should complete to bring the stadium up to date.
Right. So who's going to own the stadium?
The ownership of the stadium, the property, and all will be the city's, and we will enter into what's called a triple net lease with the ownership.
Okay, so that's where it gets a little tricky. Let me play what Alderman Green said yesterday. Get your reaction.
The part of this that is really up in the air, and I think most concerning to a number of us on the Board of Aldermen, is who owns this stadium at the end of the day. We've been burned on maintenance costs for both the Rams Stadium and then having to do this huge bond this last year for the Scott Trade Center, which has us paying $1.5 million a year out of general revenue at a time when we can't pick up trash. We have to figure out who's going to own this thing.
You know, the ownership thing is a bit of an issue for me because I don't like it when a city has ownership. I think it's just bad precedent, and I also think that you get, you know, you're put on the hook for a lot of these things. Now, if you're going to have a fund for projects and maintenance, I think that's a good thing. That's part of the problem that we ran into at Scott Trade.
Exactly right. Well, a couple things need to be cleared up here. First thing is that statement made it seem like, you know, overwhelming majority of the members of the board have a problem with the resolution, which is not. It's a handful, you know, three or four members or whatever. There's over 14 co-sponsors on the resolution already, right, which is almost unprecedented for something like this. So there's very broad support across the Board of Aldermen. The resolution only needs 15 members to pass. It has more than that in support already. So that, make sure that, you know, just put that in a box, put aside. When you take a look at the way this deal is structured, and the fact that we are capturing 50% of that amusement tax to go in for major projects and everything, right? The thing that I think a lot of the folks like Alderwoman Green continue to miss is on page 2 of the resolution, where it states very clearly that it will be a triple net lease. And exactly what a triple net lease means. A triple net lease means that the leasee is responsible for all maintenance, all upkeep, all taxes, all insurance. Everything related to that property, they are responsible for, right? So that's the type of lease we would be entering into with them.
But they're not paying the city for the lease, right? It's basically just a document. It's an agreement.
Yeah, it's an agreement. It's a triple net lease that says that
this has to happen, right?
These items are your responsibility, right? So the city isn't going to be paying for maintenance and upkeep on this thing on an annual basis and any of those things related to an insurance or anything. All of those things are the responsibility of the team owners.
Okay, right? Let me offer you an example here. What happens if, and I think that there's been some discussion about this thing being used for other events. So let's say there's a concert, just for an example. Concert comes in there. Who gets the benefit of that when it comes to revenue, and how
everybody
is that controlled?
Does.
Everybody
yeah.
does.
Yeah,
the
everybody.
Team does as well.
Yeah, the team does, but we do too, because okay. we would like to see this thing occupied every day.
Right.
Because the base numbers that I've been quoting you, right, those base numbers are just based on minimal use, right? Anything in additional will add hugely to our tax base, and the economic impact of it will be major,
okay,
right?
But they're not paying, so the owners of the state, well, you'll be the owners, but basically you're not paying real estate property taxes on this, right?
No, but we're not getting a dime in property tax from it today.
Right.
We haven't in over 60 years, right? But what we will get, but here's the thing, what we will get, we will have a piece of property now that which is valued at well over $30 million, right? We will have a major projects and a major projects fund, right? That's being accumulated every year.
What's
in
the
escrow.
Estimate of that?
The estimate of that is across the first 20 years, somewhere in the neighborhood of $22 million, right? I know that the alderwoman quoted to you yesterday that across 30 years, it was going to be $9 million. We have no idea where that number comes from. The numbers that I'm quoting you comes from, you know, professional economists.
$22 million, though, is not a lot of money when it comes to maintaining a building.
No, but it's not for maintenance, right? The maintenance and upkeep is handled on
by them. Okay,
by them.
Special projects.
Yeah. So let's say
what
could it be used for? What could it be used for? Let's say in 20 years they decide, oh, we don't want soccer didn't work out in the city of St. Louis, so we're sitting there. With the land, with a building on it, right? So we have to take care of the demo of the building, right? So what would the cost of that demo
that
be?
That could pay for that.
And okay. that can go pay
a little bit of a rainy day fund, if you
yeah,
will.
Yeah, that can go pay for the demo of the building, right? And we'd have millions of dollars left over after that, right? If you look at some of the estimates of like stadiums across the country that were demoed. And the thing that ran the cost up on those other like stadiums was the fact that they had a major amount of environmental remediation that had to happen because the years the buildings were built,
okay.
right? In this case, you're not going to have a major amount of environmental remediation because we're not going to be building with asbestos tiles, right? Hey, all of those things that were built, that they lead-based paint, all of that stuff, right? All that stuff, we can get around that.
So what's the timetable for this at this point? You say basically you have the votes anyway, right?
Oh, yeah, we have the votes. It comes up before committee on the 28th, and we move it out of the committee and then take it back to the full board.
But she was mentioning yesterday, you guys get so much damn time off. I mean, it's like you're like Charlie Brennan. You're off all the time.
I wish that was true.
When will you vote? Like
the 30th.
Okay.
The 30th. And here's the thing. It is so important. If people run around the city and say, oh, we got to do something to address the issues of public safety, homelessness, and all these other things. Well, how are you going to do that if we're not doing the things we need to do to stimulate our economy? We have to have economic activity in our city. If we continue to reject every single opportunity of economic activity in our city, we might as well turn the lights off and go home.
I think you're right.
$400 million of private investment to the city. No cost to the taxpayers of the city. Why are we wasting time talking about it?
Yeah, I don't think that all of the questions that Megan Green were illegitimate. I think these are questions that you've answered, by the way, and I think that these are good explanations, but I don't think it's illegitimate to ask them. But you're right, though, because this is what frustrates people, because if you see headlines or if you see hiccup or whatever in relation to this story, I heard from so many people the other day who are flipping angry at your board or the few members because they're like, look, we get in our way every time when it comes to this stuff. Now, I'm out of time, so I don't even have you to react to that.
I just want to react real quickly.
30 seconds. Like,
30 seconds. If you are just the average citizen without the real information in front of you, right, then it's acceptable. But if you have all the original documents, like Alderwoman Green and some of these folks, then, you know, all you have to do is read it to see that it says triple net lease. If you don't know what triple net lease is, go to Wikipedia or something and find out.
But she's trying to satisfy her Ocasio-Cortez.
I understand that, but we can't afford that at this time.
You're right. I hope it gets done. Thanks, Lewis, for coming in and clarifying. I appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.